Hello and welcome to the CG Garage episode number 8, brought to you by Chaos Group. Got a new mixer, which I'm pretty excited about, trying it out right now. The podcast itself was actually recorded on the old mixer, but the new mixer is here, so I guess I'll be able to see if which one sounds better. I think this is going to be pretty good. Pretty excited about it. With that out of the way, this episode is got Lon Groves, Corey Rubidoux, and myself. We all work for Chaos Group, but we also happen to be architects or have degrees in architecture and graduated from architecture school probably around the same time. And we all went through a similar path in terms of CG and what we understood about CG and ArcViz and understanding that part of the business. So it was really cool to sit down and talk to those guys and sort of get that out there and talk about what we know about architecture. So I really hope you enjoy it. We really want to do more architecture and design pieces as well. I really want to be able to do that. If you have any ideas of other people that'd like to get involved or talk about or other subjects you want to talk about, please let us know. Leave us comments, leave us Twitter comments as well. Our Twitter handle is @CG_labs. So there you go. Hope you enjoy, guys. Bye.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
The more random and weird it is, yeah, the better it gets.
Yup.
Okay.
Just to give you an idea, we've already started.
We've already.
This is it.
Right? This is it.
Cool. Yep.
Yeah. Have you listened to any of these yet?
No, I have not.
I'm Corey,
guilty. I am guilty.
Corey, have you passed it on to people in the Baltimore
I have,
office? And have
I'm
they
guilty.
Listened to it?
Probably not.
I got to catch up on a few myself. So,
okay. Yeah, it's so. Just not.
Don't feel too bad.
Nope. You guys just
I mean, you should feel a little bad. No,
well, look. Let's get inspired.
Okay, there you go.
Give them a reason to listen. That's
exactly.
Give
right.
them a reason to listen. Okay. Well, one of the reasons we all decided to. One of the reasons I said we should all talk, the best thing was we had a conversation was a few days ago. And the three of us are like some of the. There is more. Ted is more. But. We actually have architecture degrees. We're all architects.
Yep.
Or what? We're.
Yep. Recovering architects.
Recovering architects. And that's not uncommon that there's ex-architects in other industries. There's a lot of those that are happening. And it's not necessarily that architecture was not the path to do. It's just an alternate way of that comes out of architecture in some way. I mean, at DD, there was tons of ex-architects in the visual effects industry.
Well, I mean, when we were in school, visual effects curriculum didn't exist, right? So architecture was about the closest thing you had.
Right.
Yeah. And it was one of the first, I mean, I started modeling, 3D modeling in high school.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Program called DataCAD.
DataCAD,
back then. And I did my high school's fire exit plan.
Nice.
You know, so if the building did catch on fire, we knew how to get out thanks to me.
That's important work right there.
Yeah.
That's actually the reason I left architecture. It's true.
Fire exit.
I don't want to figure out
egress.
No. It was exactly
codes,
true.
Yep. Zoning.
Yep. Bathroom partitions.
No, I didn't care about that. I was frustrated with the fact that I was always the rendering guy, the visualization guy.
Yeah.
And I went to Rice and I had a good design degree and I wanted to practice design. It's like, and Gensler, they were very nice. They said, you know, we can find designers. We just can't find people that do what you do. So
yeah.
It's easier for us to put you in that hole because that's a hole that's harder for us to fill than to find designers.
Yeah.
But they wanted to put me into the design field as well, and I tried to be nice. And they were super nice. Like, all right, we'll put you on a design project. And at first I went to a design meeting, the first meeting. It's like, all right, we need to figure out the fire rating on this door and the handicap railing height on this handrail. And I said, oh, my God, I got to get out of here. It was
Yeah. I worked for an architecture firm right out of school for a little while. And I overheard one of the guys who was a Harvard grad, right? He's on the phone for half the day talking about different colors of beige, different varieties of beige for curtains. And there was an argument, must have been like a change order or something like that with the client. And it was at least a 2 hour conversation that, and I was working away at like doing some drawings or something like that. And I thought, like, this is what I have to look forward to. I'm scared.
Right.
I don't want to argue about curtains.
Right.
And so I decided pretty much right then and there that I was going to stick to the pretty picture side of architecture.
Yeah. I mean, what was also interesting was for me when I went to VFX and I started working in VFX is that basically I was suddenly an architect there because while that I was amongst a bunch of architects and I was the visualization guy there. So I was always the guy who knew how to do the renderings work. I was around a ton of people who wanted to make the renderings work. But when I was doing New York and I was building New York for Day After Tomorrow, they were like, oh, wait, you're an architect. You know how to make buildings. So we need you to make can you make a system where we have to do like thousands of buildings in a block and they all look correct? Because we don't know how buildings are supposed to look. I was like, you want me to design thousands of buildings? Yes. So suddenly,
do they need bathroom partitions.
Well, I sat down and he said, oh yeah, I sat down with the texture guys and they're like, oh yeah. So I explained it. It's like this wall here, you know, this would be the facade wall and this would be a party wall. So on a party wall, it'd be blank. Oh, of course. They could just, because they were just putting windows all the way around. I was like, right. No, this would be around. And then here you may have windows that are staggered because there's a stairway up there. Like, oh, of course, you know. And then I would say, down this, the top floor is usually a bigger windows because that's a, you know, mechanical floor. A mechanical floor, what's that, you know? And so I would explain it, and suddenly all the buildings look a lot more realistic. It's like, wait a minute, I'm designing buildings for the first time, which is hilarious because I've been doing it for so long. And
then you also designed them to get destroyed.
Of course. Yeah, right. Well, there was also absolutely no consequence to me making these design decisions, right?
Yeah,
as long as – so that was very freeing. It's like I didn't sit there and go, oh, my God, did I do this right? Did I do it? No, it doesn't matter. Does it look right? Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because the only way I live with myself sometimes is because I'm not registered as an architect, right? And then I went to SciArc and, you know, you spend a lot of money going to graduate school and all that good stuff. I sit down and I have to remind myself of how many pixels are rendered with V-Ray that are impacting the design of buildings around the world. And it's pretty cool, right?
I mean, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I've had the fortunate opportunity to be more involved in the design of actual projects.
Yeah.
Through visualization than I would have had I been.
Right. Because you're the first look at it.
Yeah. So. And also, you know, you contribute in a meeting or a review or something like that where you say, well, you know, actually you've got some design chops and aesthetics and so on. You can contribute at a different level. It's not like I'm just, oh, okay, let's not just the rendering guy.
All right. Right. So this just made me realize, I have to realize, and this is some of the feedback I've been getting about the podcast. We've already started and we've gone through this and but people may not actually know who we are and where we came from. So,
Good point.
Surprise. And so that's fine. I like you guys have already heard a few things from here now. So Lon, let's just start. I'm just going to go this way. Lon, you were...
I have no idea.
You went to architecture school where?
Yes. So I went to architecture school at University of Illinois.
Okay. And so how long ago was that? You don't have to say exactly.
I don't know, 20 years, something like that.
Okay.
Actually, one thing that's kind of interesting is that Phil Miller at NVIDIA,
yep,
who also I'm very involved in rendering, and you know, a few years older than I am, went to the exact same school... We have this exact same alma mater in the architecture program, and we both spent our junior year abroad
in France.
Mm-hmm. So in Versailles, we both went through the same. So it was like, wait, what?
I sat in your chair.
Yeah. So okay. So that's cool. And then you were at for a while after that. You practiced architecture.
Yeah, I was in architecture for a few years, and then I sort of specialized in 3D and some of the graphic stuff as well as IT. And then 1 year at Build Boston, which was, you know, a big conference in Boston, the guys at Neoscape, must have been year maybe 2000 or something, they had a booth and they had renderings up there that were the most realistic renderings I'd ever seen at the time. And it, I remember it said, it's like, do you know Form Z? And do you know the all the applications that they listed were not applications that I used because I was using like Viz at the time or Max.
Right, right.
And I couldn't believe that a visualization company existed, right? At you know, I didn't even know that there were companies. And at the time, there were only maybe two or three or four. The guys at AMD down in Providence had started. And then there was another group, a couple of guys that came out of MIT that were doing all the stuff out of Radiance. They were were doing everything. It was like, you know, super.
I haven't heard Radiance in 20
years. Yeah, it was crazy times. Yeah.
Right.
And so I went to the booth. I met the guys. I was blown away. And, you know, it was a couple of weeks later, I started at Neoscape. And I worked there for, you know, I was there for 12 years, which was just pretty exciting stuff. Because that was at a time when visualization was, you know, it was in its infancy.
Yeah.
And to see where it is now and what you can do, it's like, this is pretty, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. That's really cool. And then now, of course, you worked at your Chaos Group and you're the chief commercial officer. So. It is commercial often. I would say CCO, and then I say, what's this? The other C is like, commercial, I think?
Sure, yeah. That sounds right.
Creative, commercial, depends on the day, right?
So you started you were the employee number one, patient zero in LA, and then I came on board after that. It was really, really cool. And then Corey, you and I have also known each other for years, years and years, because we've always been at SIGGRAPH or whatever together. Same with Lon. And you came from where?
Undergraduate at Clemson.
Clemson, right. That's right.
And then
SIARC
for my master's.
Yeah.
And spent some time at the Helsinki University of Technology.
Wow. There you go.
And I think that's really where all the dots and stars aligned with as far as the technologies go and visualization and the importance of modeling and so on is just, you know, number one, I didn't speak Finnish at all.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to.
But you do now, right?
I'm fluent in it.
Start to finish.
Yep. I am 4K resolution.
You speak Finnish in 4K?
Yeah.
High def.
But yeah, I was looking for.
I think it's called Ultra HD now.
I was looking for a job and to keep me there for the summer and continue my studies over there. And visualization was how I got employed by rendering a project in Spain for Christian Gulickson Architects over there. And then, this is 99.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a small studio over there that actually was specializing in visualization. And Thomas Westerholm from, at the time it was called Render, .dk. And those guys were doing a lot of really interesting visualization projects for the top Finnish firms that were doing competitions all the time, one after another, you know.
Nice.
And so it was pretty cool to, I saw what they were doing. And I'm like, I want to kind of be a part of this. So jumped on board with those guys and learned a lot. To watch the visualization process at that stage was it was just eye opening because to see these plans come to life photorealistic form was like, whoa, okay, this is pretty cool. But the thing that really struck me was we were doing these projects for these architects and buildings are under construction and we're out there in the job site in a construction trailer looking at the 3D model, an ARCHICAD model, for instance, at the time.
Nice.
And, you know, they're looking at the ARCHICAD model in 3D, trying to set footings in place out there, and they're talking over 3D data, you know? And I was like, whoa, this is so much different than just sitting at a board with drawings, you know?
Yep.
And then when I came back to the States, it was still a lot of 2D, 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 drawing. And I really just was like, well, this is kind of boring compared to that 3D stuff that we were doing over there, you know? And so you realize at that point, this is before BIM came along as an acronym and before folks started realizing that there was so many dollars being burnt on change orders because people were looking at drawings and things were getting built that weren't necessarily explain, write, and draw, you know. And I just was like, this is it. This is the way of the future. This is where things are going. And worked for a firm in Baltimore and ended up getting a copy of Maya and doing some visualization there. And
Didn't you spend like 20 grand or something on Maya? Or that was Maya when it ran on an Octane machine?
Yeah.
SGI?
Yep. We spent a lot of money on the first hardware set back then. You know?
Yeah.
So, and then ultimately, you know, the funny thing that led me to V-Ray is we had a project that was probably a 15-story building, something like that, downtown Baltimore. And we just couldn't push the render through anything, right? I mean, I was trying just about every rendering engine out there on the market. And our go-to was Lightscape, right?
Yeah.
We all loved Lightscape, and it was like kind of the one-stop shop, as close as you can get to a one-button render, right? Set it, forget it, come back after 4 days, and you've got everything baked in. But if you had a mistake, it was...
Oh, my God. And modeling for Lightscape was, like, surgical.
Yeah.
It was just...
You couldn't fake anything because it had to tessellate everything.
Yep.
Lighting through tessellation, which is insane if you think about it.
Yeah, I'm amazed at what actually we pulled off with that program.
Lightscape.
Like what you could actually do.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was very, very interesting. But it was. I mean, that's how important lighting was to architects back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
And people wouldn't do that, you know? And I was one of my things that I remember thinking about is like, why is it that we need to go through all of these damn hoops to get this right when people are making movies, they just do it a different way, right? And it's like, oh, well, you know what they're doing? They're just painting it, you know?
Yeah.
They're literally just painting it. We are looking at what it would actually look like.
Right. So, I mean, you were using IES lights, right? You would tell somebody about an IES light, and they were like, what are you even saying?
Yeah, but we would be using IES lights.
But you had to. You're right. Like, that was what you did.
And an IES light back then was only used by lighting manufacturers to figure out how many lumens they were going to have in a corner. They didn't actually see it. They would just say, oh, yeah, it'll be dark here, so I need to add this kind of light.
Yeah, I don't know how many projects actually had Bega lights installed because that was the only IES file that I used. 10
manufacturers, and you knew every single one of them by the file name.
Yep. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
But, yeah, we're trying to get this project put together and some images made, and at this point, we were trying to do the animation, and we just couldn't crank it out. And so after 6 days probably of Lightscape chewing away at this model, it was just too much.
Right.
So I found this obscure beta forum, and these guys were talking about
the Delphi forum.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. We've talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah. And I'm like, what is this V-Ray thing?
Yep.
So that was it, you know, and then really just never turn it back. And that's that was a stepping stone for pushing the size and scale and scope and detail of architectural models for me, is I always just try to push as much as possible. And V-Ray has never failed. I mean, from, you know, the early days, even having one of the largest models we did in back at Air St. Gross,
mm-hmm.
when I was there, model of downtown Baltimore. I think we had probably 20 or so buildings,
mm-hmm.
as part of a master plan that were all pretty highly detailed models that were all proxied into a file.
Mm-hmm.
This was 2004.
So you're probably still on 32-bit at that time.
Yeah.
So you still only had a 2 gig limit.
Yeah.
Yep.
We were using the 3 gig switch, and it was...
And you're still able to render it.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, there was, again, at the time, there was nothing that compatible.
So you're when you were back at Air St. Gross, you guys started making versions of V-Ray that were running inside of SketchUp and Rhino, is that
what's going on?
Sorry.
Yeah, our initial project, so... Joe, our lead developer on mm-hmm. V-Ray, all of our V-Ray products in the Baltimore office, he was introduced to me. His mom worked at the firm, and he was working, or he was going to Full Sail. He just graduated, and he came in, and I really was trying to find someone to write some plugins to get data from SketchUp or Rhino, Form-Z, AutoCAD into our 3D Studio Max pipeline for V-Ray. And the initial project that we worked on was kind of a real-time renderer, if you will, for Revit. Mm-hmm. And we were spitting out a V-Ray mesh file, and he was getting the V-Ray mesh file, and we were able to kind of, well, actually we went through a different bunch of different mesh types, but we made a proof of concept, this little real-time viewer, and it was all based on V-Ray stuff. And then we're like, whoa, wait a minute. We've got these assets coming in, and we're able to use the V-Ray mesh file, blah, blah, blah. And so that was a stepping stone, but I realized pretty quickly that, you know, we're getting geometry from guys that are modeling in SketchUp, and the interior designers are using Rhino for this piece, and, you know, the guys working on the core building are using Revit. And to do visualization projects in the timeframes that we needed to do them, and there was just no way we could remodel everything all the time. So Joe started writing these tools, and lo and behold, you know, V-Ray for Rhino came out of it. Based on demand, people were saying, hey, we'd like to see V-Ray for Rhino more than anything. So that's kind of how we spawned V-Ray for Rhino off inside of that company.
And then V-Ray for SketchUp.
Yep, came shortly after.
So, and then at that point, I guess, I remember, when was it exactly that Chaos Group bought you guys?
In 2011.
2011. So yep. 2011, that was the first time that the Baltimore office for Chaos Group was formed, right?
Yep.
And that was the way that they basically formed an office in the U.S. And so technically it's all works there. So it's really cool because what's going on in Baltimore is really kind of leading the way for a lot of the visualization and architecture design groups that are going on out there. And I really, you know, think it's really impressive. So I think it's cool that we've had this going and we have things going on the East Coast and on the West Coast and that we have different markets, and it sort of showcases all the different things that we're doing. So, and you're heading up that office now, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Cool.
And, you know, just totally excited about 2015, what's ahead of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
It just, I really still feel like it's the tip of the iceberg of what we're going to do to the world out here. And,
Absolutely. We had a podcast a few podcasts ago where we did the wrapping up of a look back at 2014, and it was like, wow, that was amazing what we did. And it says, that is nothing.
Just wait to
see what we're going to plan. Because I never thought, at that time it was about a year that we'd started the LA office and the Chaos Group labs and everything else. And I was like, oh my God, how many things have we actually done in labs that we're doing? And I was like, I have a lot more planned for 2015. Lon's been, you know, pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. So it's been good to see that.
By the way, we need to get signs made for the Baltimore office for Chaos Group Labs.
Okay.
Yeah. Perfect.
So we can focus on getting, you know, some.
In my mind, it's all labs. It doesn't have to be east or west, doesn't it? You don't have to, you know. It's not like rap groups, right?
Sure. It's not big.
If you want to make it,
West Coast choppers, East Coast choppers.
It's cool with me. If you want to do it that way, that's fine. I don't mind a little stuff, but yeah, definitely make signs. Although we got to figure out our signage.
We have a little bit of a signage issue. We've tried a couple of times and then we scrape it off.
I think at this point it'd be cheaper just to hire some really good Italian guy with a steady hand.
Into the glass. Yeah, exactly. We need the guy who did the signage at the pizzeria.
I was thinking from Hatsucker Proxy, remember? He was like painting the names on the door by hand.
All right.
So I remember the first time I just finished up this crazy. I when I think about it, I can't even believe that I actually did it. Finished a Lightscape project. It was a full animation in Lightscape, and I remember we actually rented machines, and then I created batch files for each one of the frame sequences from like 1 to 100, and then 200 to 300. And ran those batch files, launched them individually on each one of the machines so that they would render. And and then, you know, put it all together and then output it to VHS tape and delivered it, right?
VHS.
Yeah.
And it worked, but that was like almost the last thing that worked, because the next project that came into the studio was this huge interior for a mall at Columbus Circle in New York. And it's like six stories. It's a big open volume with six stories. The architects were like six different architects were involved. SOM was the lead architect, and then Vignoli's office was in it. Elvis Manfredi. And that was also the first time, like, how do you make data from several different architectural firms fit together and then model that for Lightscape? Nope. Yeah. We tried it. We actually got a couple of hallways and things like that that looked, you know, they looked good, but that was as far as you could go. And one of the renderings that we decided to do was this huge cross section to the entire building. So yeah. It was the AOL Time Warner building.
Oh, I think I remember.
And it was like, you know, just a cross section of the whole thing, including the basement, which had a gym. And that was one of the first big proof of concept renderings we had for V-Ray. And we put regular materials on it with one light and it rendered.
Right.
It was like, and it was a huge, like, I don't know, 3K or 4K image. Not a problem.
Yeah.
And we couldn't even, and from that point on, it was like, we were not ever looking back. I think there was a very brief moment that, you know, when they brought Lightscape into Viz for a while, right? It just, you know, gave it a try. In fact, I think there may be an article that I wrote in like 2000 and whatever that's like, here's a review of this thing. And that was it. It just was done deal.
Sayonara.
Goodbye. And so, actually, what happened right after that was the studio got the project for City in Bloom, which was the Big Dig in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
And instead of like one building with, you know, five architects, it was a city with the biggest construction project in the planet.
Right.
And the whole studio just, you know, worked on that thing for 6 months, which was crazy because it had trees and 1,000 cars and just
live footage. You guys were,
yeah, it had, you know, we yeah, it was wild. It was wild.
That's cool. Well, the thing is, so if you look back at that time, I mean, all of us, I can't, you know, we're kind of getting along in our time and our age, but back then that stuff was new.
Yeah.
That was visualization or computer visualization was kind of new. There was some 3D here and there, et cetera, but doing quality renders was new and hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were looking for different solutions, and there was a lot of different things floating around. Lightscape was a very, very good solution at the time because of its ability to do GI.
Yeah.
On what would be, you know, something that's a tenth of an iPhone right now, right? You were able to do GI on that solution. So no wonder it took 4 days to do that. But now it's obviously gotten better and better and better. But I remember one of the arguments at that time was, it's like, oh, well, this all looks good. It's nice to try to make it look photoreal or whatever, but it's never going to replace illustration. Or it's never going to, you know, illustration still has something that feels better than a rendering, or there was always that argument that was happening,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and
I, what's interesting now is that obviously now that form of illustration, let's just call it illustration, is widely accepted at this point as a form to show off design.
Yeah,
architectural visualization is grown at this point, so everything looks very, very photoreal, right? And I really like that. It's amazing. It's like, oh, just like we were just looking at Behance today, and there was 50 new images today.
Yeah.
Of what would have been considered top level visualization from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's just 50 of them today that some random guys have done, and they're all very talented. But,
yep.
But it's just random stuff that have been out there. So there's a lot of that that's going on, and what's interesting is that there's something that you and I were discussing the other day where no matter how good the tools are, there's still something that's important that the illustrator, the renderer, either CG or non-CG, and a photographer all have, and that is having a good eye.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
And there's something that's important that still holds up to this day that, well, it's not all easy because the tool made it easy anymore. Yeah. You know, there is something I always use this illustration. It's like, just because I bought my dad a Leica doesn't turn him into, you know, a photographer. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's no way that that's going to happen. And I can guarantee you that the photographs coming out of that camera are not necessarily going to be the best photographs by a long shot. So there's something important. So you had a couple of really cool stories. One of them ones I like, let's just step back, was because of now visualization has become so much closer to photography in a lot of ways, the way you compose things like a photograph. And then the lighting is just a natural thing that happens through the tools you're using. Tell the story about talking to the architectural photography company and how he was looking at one of your renders and what that was going about. And tell that story.
Yeah, I mean, so I was involved with the American Society of Architectural Illustrators for a while, and that was founded by Steve Oles and Frank Cosentino, who I consider some of the most amazing illustrators ever. And then, you know, there were guys like Tom Schaller and so on. They just, their hand illustrations were something that I aspired to and looked up at. And there were some years there that there was this kind of disconnect between the illustration, you know, the hand illustration and the digital stuff. And it wasn't until I think the guys at AMD Studio had put together a competition rendering for a memorial. I think it was like a Korean War memorial or something like that in DC. And it was the first, you know, it won the Hugh Ferris. I think it won the top prize for the ASAI. And, you know, it really had this beautiful warmth. And that was something that I felt was aspiration. It was photographic, but it was illustrative at the same time. Mm. And so when I got involved with the ASAI, I really sought out all of these different, you know, people. And before the photography company, the Hedrick Blessing guys, I'll talk about that in a second. But the first one that I ever went to, I got an image that I'd worked on for Rockefeller University. It had these trees in the foreground that were all kind of old winter trees, and, you know, just even creating the damn trees in an onyx tree or whatever at that point was like,
oh, right.
You know, you had to have a botany degree. but the fact that you could do it was pretty amazing. And so I did this rendering, and it didn't make the awards. So you get like an award of excellence or the higher awards, but it got an honorable mention, and it was included in the back of the catalog. And I remember being so, you know, I was pretty proud of that fact that it was like, it was actually printed out in something. And I'm walking around going to different classes at ASAI, and Steve Oles comes up to me and he puts his hand on my shoulder, and Steve is like, you know, he's like, it's like Yoda comes to you and says something. And Steve opens up the catalog and points to the image. And he goes, he's like, I just want you to know that I think this was worthy of the Hugh Ferris. Like, I didn't make the award of excellence, and he's telling me that, you know, it could have won.
Right.
And I just, like, I probably turned red, and, you know, I it's crazy to even think about it now, but it was so cool. And then Steve goes, you know, if I could offer, you know, one thing to critique. And by all means, like, this is exactly what I want to hear. I mean, you know, how do you get better? And he goes, the trees could use one more level of bifurcation. And I was like, thinking to myself, I'm like, what the hell is bifurcation? But then you realize, yeah, there was, you know, the tree branches need that one extra level of tree branch that would make it, you know, the twig to the you know, little piece, and it was such an astute eye. It was something that you would never get anywhere else. You know, like, I was absolutely blown away by that, but inspired at the same time. Right. It was just, it was something that pushed me to continue to go. And it was, I don't know if it was the next year later or the year after that, but we worked on the Plaza in New York. And that's when I was really getting into the photographic style. So if you look at that first illustration, it was very illustrative. And then if you look at the next one, it was, you know, I started to really get into photography and try to build up some of the nuances. And I was, you know, studying all kinds of architectural photographers. And I was at the conference, the ASAI conference at Chicago. And that's where Hedrick Blessing is based. And they're one of the oldest architectural photography firms in the country, well-respected. I mean, the stuff that they do is awesome. And John Miller, who's one of the principals there, well, it was kind of funny because now the artwork's in the show. So that's like a whole different kind of, right, you know, proud papa moment. And because it was like a 4K image, you could print it out at 30 inches by 24 inches. And so I printed out this big board, not even really computing that, you know, most of the rest of the hand illustrations are like 8x11. Napkin sketches and right, stuff. And so there's this big frickin' image, right? But at least it held up. Like you could get up to it and you could look at the detail and so on. And I'm having a conversation with John and he goes, you know, jokingly, or half jokingly, he's like, oh, he's like, you're going to put me out of business because this, you know, this is beautiful. It's photographic. And he goes, he was talking about the quality of the light and so on. But then he goes, I worked with, and I forget his first name, but it was Hedrick. It was the, you know, the guy whose name was on the door. And he was the best at setting up these architectural photo shoots.
Tell him what's important about that.
And so, you know, he would set up the camera. And then he would look through it and make sure there weren't any cotangencies with the furniture, mm-hmm, right? And this was the first illustration that I'd ever done where in the computer looking through it, like I didn't care where any of the furniture or any of the pieces lived in plan. It was, how does it look in the frame?
Right, right.
And so he goes, he was a master at, you know, move it over here. I mean, he would just really like pick everything out. And he goes, one thing that I appreciate about what you've done here is I could tell that you gave this, you know, a lot of care to get rid of all these cotangencies.
Right.
And it was true. It was like the first time I'd really done that. And I'm like, oh my God, this, you know,
he picked up on it,
yeah, you know? And he goes, so if I, you know, I could tell you is like, just offer your critique, like you got them all except for here, 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 and here. it was like 10 of them.
Good try.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, you're getting there, buddy.
Right.
But again, you know, it was just those kind of defining moments of being with the, you know, getting right, the critique of the right people at the right time.
But I think that's awesome. That is a level of knowledge and importance that has lost. Is being lost, because those guys who were doing architectural photography, they were sat there and they trained by masters to make sure this is done right. And now what's happening is everyone's being able to do that, and they're just throwing a bunch of furniture and fruits and flowers in there, and they're like, "Look at my architectural rendering." Well, it's a rendering of a bowl of flowers or fruit or whatever it is. There's a little bit of a lack of attention that happens in terms of thinking about the art of actual composing architectural imagery that's happened, and that I think it would be great to see some of that come back.
Well, the thing is that it happens. It does happen, but, you know, for the same reason that the guys at Hedrick Blessing are the masters, and then I pick up a camera and I go take a photograph and it's pretty good. It's learned. It's something, yeah, that you have to practice and you have to experience.
They sat there with a master and they got there and they learned and they learned and they learned. And that's why that firm has been around for a while. And that's why those artists are
and
well
so
trained.
I do see, really, yeah, I do see visualization that's you know, amazing on that level. It just takes.
But these are the folks that have the eye, you know, the Peter Guthries of the world.
Bertrand Benoit.
Yeah.
But they, you know, but they also studied, right?
Yeah.
And I understand. And I think that there is something that I for some of the younger listeners out there, that it's not just, oh, look, my rendering can be illustrative. There's something beyond that that's important. Just because you're able to get your shaders right and your lighting right and your depth of field or whatever else you want to put in there as a sweetener doesn't mean you've composed a good image necessarily.
Yeah.
And composition is a very important thing, and that's not going to be done by your software, and it's not going to be done by your settings. That's going to be done by looking and studying and understanding that process and having a good eye about it.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that is we ran away from being the specialists in the firm, right? We ran away from being pigeonholed into this kind of thing. And, you know, now we can appreciate both places, both chairs.
Yeah.
You can look and say, now we know why, you know, we were where we were then.
Yep. Right.
Because you had a combination of a good eye, good skill set, designer, understood the language of putting buildings together, whatever, you know. So there's still room today for the specialist out there, which is really, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you listen to Steve Oles or someone say, you're going to put an end to my business, it's interesting because it's actually I don't know, I think it's quite the opposite. I mean,
yep.
There's still so much for even the best visualization artists out there in the CG world to learn from.
Right.
You know, the Steve Oles and so on and so forth, like our good friend Jeremy Kay at Studio.
Yeah.
JDK, I mean, you know, it's one reason why his work is so beautiful.
And there is no reason why we can't think of us inventing another language or inventing another way of thinking of composition or whatever we're going to be doing, I think is important, right? Because as another example, animation is something, it's our role to invent that, right?
Yeah.
It was our way of thinking about, well, animation is something that was never part of the illustration dialogue. And it was our thing when we started to make that happen. And what did we do? We made 1,000 frames and walked around our building, mm-hmm. right? And it was the worst thing you could do.
Yeah.
And I hated it. I hated it. And the first thing I said, it's like, why are you doing this? It's like, well, they want to do a walkthrough. It's like, the only time a camera moves forward through a space in a film with nothing in front to follow is a horror film when yeah. you're being chased by something, right? So it's terrifying to see this. I mean, there's no reason to do that. So architectural walkthroughs was just like the worst thing ever. And I was just like, there's got to be another way to tell a story, not different ways of doing cameras. And I was starting to get into that, and then finally I just left. I went into work visual effects, and then I remember being, you know, invited by Jeff Marl at CG Architect to go mm-hmm. and see a few things and to talk. And I saw stuff that Neoscape was doing, and all those the guys at that was it
Uniform probably at
yeah.
the time, yeah,
yeah. And Uniform, I was looking at all the stuff,
D-Box,
and looking at all those stuff, I was like, whoa, there you go. That's what architectural narration needs to be, storytelling, right? They're telling a story. They've gone to that next level. They've made it something interesting. And that was what I was waiting for. So I left just before that started to happen. But that's what I was really wanted to see in that story. And it was that's the Neoscapes are going to be the places and those companies that founded that, right? Yeah. They're going to be the ones that's like, oh, yeah, well, or D-Box, right? Yeah. So,
well, I can't tell you how many times I would get on my soapbox with a client and say, you know, a walkthrough. I'm not even going to allow you to use that word. Like, we're
fly through, walk through.
I'm going to strap you to a wheelbarrow and push you down the hallway, and you can tell me what that experience feels like, right? Like, that sucks. That's not something that you want. I mean, yeah. Watch television, watch a commercial. You see that they cut the camera
right.
for a reason.
Oh, you know what was one of the most inspiring things also? Do you guys remember, well, Dwell, remember Dwell Magazine,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
There was a Dwell Magazine show. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
There was a show on TV.
I don't remember that one. Though.
And it was basically, you know, like your home and garden type network thing or whatever. And it was Dwell, and they would walk you through houses. And they did show you houses just like they do their photography. If you see the photography in Dwell, what that's cool about it is that there's actual people sitting in a chair or a cat or a bull or something happening.
Lifestyle,
right? Yeah. It's not just, you know, Architecture Digest type pictures. There are actually something interesting about it. Mm. Well, they filmed it and showed you the space. And I was like, that's what your animation needs to look like. It needs to look like what they did in that documentary, right? Or that showcase. It's like, there's a slight camera move. There's some things happening in the background, but very, very subtle, like someone walking from the hallway or there. And you say, oh, okay, that's how big the space is, you know? And that's feeling it and understanding it. But no, there was no camera moving forward.
Yeah.
None.
Yeah.
It's funny. The you guys will appreciate this. I think the flip from fly through to filmic was for me was KD Labs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Desert
yeah.
House project.
Yeah. That they and did. Joe K. Yeah. yeah. So yeah, I remember. Yes, and that got Fincher's attention. It was enough to get Fincher's attention, and that's why his career kind of took off.
Yeah, that was pretty inspiring.
Because that was a story there, yeah, right? Suddenly you're like invested in, oh, something's happening here. I want to know what's going on. You know?
That rock just moved, man. Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and for us, it was Law 5. You know, Law 5 was, and it kind of was influenced by, I mean, very obviously by the stuff that the KD Labs guys were doing. And,
right.
And it was, you know, the camera moves are meant to be a little bit, there are things that you can only do when it's virtual, right? Yeah, but time lapse and it had a style, it had a vision and emotion to it, and that was something that you know we was really well thought out and orchestrated and that kind of kicked off a whole new genre for at least for us when we're at Neoscape.
Yeah, that was a very inspiring piece for a lot of people to see, and actually I remember the flower opening the sun study, but not a sun study, right?
I mean, right.
Yep.
There's a time lapse kind of thing going on there.
Time lapses are beautiful in architecture, and there's a great way to do that as well, because people do time lapse photography is a common thing to do, and so when you're doing that, you make do it right.
And Josh Besaisen, who is the sort of creative director at the time working on that, he was. Also a musician, so the music is actually him. His musician's name is Maramari, which is after the dive roll you can do in Metroid. So you know, and it was funny too, because at the time there were, sometimes you'd hear like a Maramari song on CSI and you're like, hey, that's Josh's song. But what was cool about it was because he was a musician, or because he brought that sort of creative aspect to it, there was like a music video influence, right? There was kind of like, okay, maybe the narrative's a little bit more fluid.
So it felt.
And maybe there's a sensuality to it with the story.
And that's so important in architecture as well, is I think that, and that's, again, a very, very good point, is that people do that and they're just, I'll just throw some music on there, and it's like the worst choice.
Oh, yeah.
The worst choice that's done. It's like, if you actually just pay a little bit of attention to music and then suddenly it'll inspire you to put an edit together that makes more sense and then you have a story. Really, it's like filmmaking, right? You got to make a film that's interesting and good.
Well, that also kicked off sort of the experiment of green screen too, right? Because that had a real character in it, and it wasn't.
Right. Of course.
So it was like, let's get a model in and actually direct her to do some things.
I don't know. I got away with the real people for a long time.
Yep.
Those old like 3D mocap people that look like they have a stick in their butt
walking around. Oh yeah, I remember those. Those are the 3.5D ones. They actually walked.
It's like, that is a weird walk, but it's, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
There was a while there that you know, even the lectures, or if I would present at a conference or something like that, I would call it the end of the walkthrough. Right. It was like, let's leave this behind and let's talk about all of these other things, whether it's the narrative and so on. And also, you know, back to the photography thing too, I had a kind of an interesting experience of getting into photography because I'd already been an illustrator for so long. So, you know, if I ever gave anybody advice at those talks, or if I presented anything, it was like, pick up a camera, become one with photography, because there's so many more compositions that you can go through by just reacting to something and then train yourself to be able to do that. I came the opposite way. So, you know, when I started to photograph things, everything was so much more like precious. I wasn't like a photojournalist going out there. I was like, nope, I'm going to put the tripod out here. I'm going to get the tilt shift lens and we're going to look at this thing from this exact angle. And that was fine. But I think it's also freeing if somebody gets out there and explores a little bit, and you can train yourself that way.
Yeah. I mean, like trying to pick up and really understand the rule of thirds is not something that, you know, you might want to just pick up a CG environment and try and, you know, figure out what to do. I mean, you grab the camera and, you know, start taking pictures of real world stuff and understand what composition is.
Yep.
A little bit more before you can get in the CG environment.
You know, even that's funny you mentioned, because even the rule of thirds at that point was like, oh my God, this is really important information. Yeah. You know, you might have intuited it and then, you know, you would tell people. And now it's just built into Lightroom, right? Like right. You go into Lightroom and you're like, okay, I'm going to pull up my crop grid.
Yeah.
And oh, there it is. Yeah. Not only do I have that, but I've got, you know, diagonals. I've got the golden, you know, spiral and.
Do-do-do-do-do. Yeah.
Damn, kids, I've got everything these days.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine to give them, but some of them may not even know what it is and how to use it. So that's a thing. Yeah. So, couple of quick stories. One is you brought up the tilt shift, right? So that I hated tilt shift. I hated them because my reasoning for why tilt shift existed is that for architectural illustrators, even though they said we want the top of the building looks too small if you look up, really is because I think that they didn't want to do 3-point perspective because it was too complicated. They'd rather do a 2-point perspective. So they just made it look like that. So people got so used to doing 2-point perspective as illustrations that that's how they were used to seeing their buildings. So when a photographer took a picture of the building, like, I don't understand. Why does the top of the building look small? Because you're looking up at a building that's really far away. And it just, so they invented this tilt shift thing that would basically turn it into a 2-point perspective. Mm. But then the top of the building looks like it's massive to me compared to the bottom of the building. The windows are bigger on the top of the building than they are on the bottom of the building.
It's like anything, if you use it at the wrong way or the wrong time.
Sure.
But really the, you know, if we use the Hedrick Blessing guys as an example in the early 1900s, they were shooting buildings with straight verticals,
right?
But they were doing it with a large format camera,
and that's what it does.
And they did it on purpose because that was, you know, it wasn't necessarily because of.
But they were matching illustrations, though.
They weren't necessarily matching the illustrations, but it was a language that they were keeping with.
But you can't do that with animation,
right?
So that's part of what I was appreciated is animation was forced back into standard. Perspective laws of photography as opposed to trying to match illustrations, right? Yeah.
And I remember actually having the same conversation with Nils too, because Nils would say the same thing as you. It's like it's okay for these, you know, stillman, but if you try to do it with animation, try matching something into it, right?
Even if you had a still even if you had a lock off of a building that's like that and you had trees and people walking by, it would immediately look wrong.
It looks weird. Yeah. It definitely looks
so weird. It's just, it's fine for a still because it looks like an illustration, but if it's moving in any way, even if the camera's not moving, it just looks weird.
Well, and thinking about Jokay, like in Oblivion, right? One of the things that I appreciate about that movie is, to me, that is a lesson in cinematography as well as composition.
Well, that depends.
From an architectural standpoint.
That depends. I mean, that is a certain type of dialogue. It's not everyone follows that, right? He's going to frame someone centered. A lot of people would say that's the worst thing to do, right? But he's doing that, and he's developing a dialogue about that, and that works. You know, so other people have done it. You know, Stanley Kubrick pretty much follows 1-point perspective, right? For a lot of stuff. And you know, obviously, what's his name? Name blank, a Rushmore guy. Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson. Everything is 1-point perspective and from his point of view, right? So, and almost comically, like he's almost a parody of himself at this point, you know? So it works and it looks great. And Joe, I've worked with Joe. I mean, he sits there and he says, how many pixels are on the right side? How many pixels on the left side? Okay, you're 2 pixels off, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he really was obsessed about it. And that's fine. He likes that and it works well. And it certainly works in a movie like Tron, you know? Like,
right.
You need that, right? I'd like, that looks cool. Cool. That's the way that world needs to look, right? Mm-hmm. So, it was cool. So, the next thing I think is important is I think that now, and I think you guys will all agree, we're at another pass, another point where this is where we have the opportunity to define a new thing, and that's in VR.
Yep.
So the VR world is the new thing where no one really has a plan as to how that world is supposed to be represented. And it's our or narrated or whatever that is, and that's our role to define that. And I think that's also a role that's extremely important to the design group, because that VR is now That is a tool. That is the next thing.
Yeah. And well, and it's just a given, right?
It's a given. It's a absolutely given. It's just like back 10 years ago, where it was like, it's a given that people are going to be doing rendering now, or 15 years ago, whenever we started doing this stuff. And then now people are like, well, it's a given that you're going to be using VR and there's going to be solutions out there. You just have to figure out how it's going to, what tools you're going to use and how you're going to make that work. Because there's going to be a lot of bad VR out there, I can guarantee you.
Yeah.
And someone's going to figure out, someone's going to come up with something that's going to go, I've got something that, and they're like, oh, problem is it's going to be hard for us to experience it, right? Because everyone's going to have to get VR headsets, which is going to happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting because, you know, it's bringing back to life that word that we were trying to get away from, the walkthrough.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and it, and but the engagement that people have. I mean, look at when we were at AIA.
It was... But it doesn't necessarily have, okay, so that's an important point because I think that that's the same problem. If you start to make the person actually walk through the space, then you have a problem. If you allow that person just to experience it from a chair, but have a level of choice of eyeball, moving head, whatever, enough to feel very immersive, that's good enough in a lot of ways to tell your story.
Yeah.
Because I don't think walkthroughs are going to – I think that walkthroughs are going to be the one thing that everyone's going to try.
And, oh, that's what I was going to say. Everyone will do it and try it. And there's probably going to be some that are interesting and successful.
Absolutely. But I think that it'll also they're going to show it to clients and clients are going to go, ooh,
yeah.
Hold on a second.
Like, why do I want to walk through the
airport? Why do I want to throw up? Why do I want to? Because a lot of people are not necessarily tuned to being able to walk through, and they're never going to get the speed right. So it feels like you're going to be walking at 35 miles an hour, which is immediately going to make you nauseous, right?
Right, right.
So it's a very important way of figuring out how to make that thing feel natural.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can do that. And I think that people are like, great, I just experienced my space and I wanted to throw up, you know? Yeah. So you got to find a way to make that happen. I'm really curious to see where the next VR stuff is going to happen in the design world.
Really, well, I mean, when we were at AIA and, you know, we were doing the Atom View demos and,
yep.
and so on, like the ability just to put on the Rift, stand in a space that you designed and judge, like make design choices, look at it in a way that you can experience it for real.
For real. I think it's a huge thing. So, I mean, we can talk about it now because they're obviously showing it at CES.
Well, and we showed it at AIA. But
no, but Neuralize guys are basically really very, 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 very focused. There's a company called Neuralize that we work very, very closely with, and they're extremely focused on hyper realistic VR experiences.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So the highest resolution, best looking thing you can do, and they do it in a number of different ways that they're experimenting with, all of which is a lot of it's rendered, obviously, and baked, and different things that they're doing, and just straight out rendered. But you put it on, and it's a new level of photography experience. And I still think it's a photographic experience because you don't necessarily feel like you need to walk around, even though you can in certain things.
Yep.
But if you experience it as looking around at a space and understanding height, looking at a photograph and saying, ooh, that's a really tall atrium. It's not the same thing as putting on an Oculus Rift, not doing anything, no walking or anything else, just looking up. It's like, whoa, now I see how tall that is.
Yep.
It's a very different experience. And I think that's something that I think is important. That's where it's going to be, is all the same rules. Again, there's a lot of the same rules, lighting, composition, whatever you're doing. But now you're setting it up for someone to walk through, not walk through, to experience in a different way. And I'm really
experience.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how that happens, right? But they've gone to the next level. Like they've gone full on sound design, so that when you turn your head, you can experience the sound, and it's very, very, very immersive, which I think is awesome, awesome, awesome. Cool. What else you guys want to talk about?
Nothing.
Nah.
What you got planned for 2015 there, Corey, over there in Baltimore?
Well, you guys are moving into
when's soft shell crab season?
Into a new office right now. Yeah. putting the stickers on.
Moving into a new office. Looking forward to getting the team in there and
nice.
February, like very soon, right?
Yeah, February 1st we should be in.
Nice.
Stickers on the door.
I think that's Super Bowl Sunday, by the way, so you might want to.
As long as the Ravens are there, we'll be okay.
Nice.
Not so. If any. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Well, 3.0 for Rhino and SketchUp. We're really, you know, looking forward to getting that rolling in.
Nice.
In a bigger way and get that out to the folks who are also looking at it, looking for it in a big way.
Yeah. Nice.
You know, a few other top secret projects going on over there.
There's always top secret projects, those are the best.
Impacting.
Especially if you know about them.
Yeah. Well, we promised to bring some big stuff to the AEC market this year, right?
Right.
New products and
stuff. Yeah. There's some really interesting, cool stuff that's happening, and we're excited to just for the listeners to know, there's a really exciting stuff coming. So keep an eye out and look for announcements. And yeah,
I'm sure it'll be subject of future podcasts.
Yeah.
Oh, and I've also figured out. How easy it is to actually do podcasts over Skype. There's actually a really easy way for me to do it. So we can have you on podcasts if you ask cool stuff and you want to talk about it, or any one of your guys in Baltimore want to be on a podcast.
That's awesome. That's great.
So we can do it.
Cool.
Yeah. So we'll definitely have this going on.
And it sounds good. It sounds.
Oh, it sounds great. Yeah. It's really, I feel embarrassed to about how easy it actually was.
How simple it was to figure
out. I was going through some complex, like, I need to get a whole new piece of software and drivers. And this is like, no, you actually just literally plug your computer into the mixing board and you're done.
You need a cable.
You need a $5 cable. And it is like, whatever comes out of Skype goes into the mixing board and it sounds perfect. Damn it. That was that simple.
Cool.
So yeah, we can do that. And we're going to be doing some of those. And then, Lon, we've already talked about some of our 2015. But I want to bring up one more thing. We've gotten some tweets of some guys who have said, and we don't have to answer them now, but there's some guys who basically are really enjoying the podcast, which is cool. And they basically want to us to answer some questions and stuff like that. So I'm not going to answer some of the questions now because I think we need to go over them before we answer them. And maybe we'll do the next one when we do it soon.
Do we know the answers to the questions?
No, but I think we should review.
Yeah.
We should review.
We would be glad to answer the questions.
Yeah, we're not at the point where we can like, hello, caller, come on in.
Right. Welcome to Rendering Talk.
But I think that's a great idea, and so we will be doing some questions. So what I will put out there to the listeners is go on Twitter. Seems to be fine for me. I don't mind. Let's put it out on Twitter. Ask your questions. Don't be afraid to ask us, and we'll start compiling some answers at the end of the podcast and putting them in there or whatever. So, or maybe we'll just compile a whole bunch of them and do a podcast just about answering questions.
Yep.
So it'll be fun.
Topic suggestions, all that good stuff.
Topic suggestions are always good. But if you have specific questions or whatever, we should probably compile it. And maybe we should just start seeing what kind of stuff they want to talk about.
Get some phone lines installed. We'll get, you know,
yeah,
really do
that. I'll do my hello caller, my Phil Donahue impressions. No one knows who Phil Donahue is.
I do because he was on before Bozo Circus. I couldn't wait for Phil Donahue to be off my television.
Hello, renter number
no
one.
No offense to Phil. It's just, I mean, he wasn't Bozo, so.
Bozo Circus.
Yeah.
You were a clown, weren't you?
Let's not go there. Maybe for a little bit.
Two great embarrassing moments about Lon. Lon had studied something involving clowning, and I had studied something involving miming. So it's actually completely ridiculously embarrassing of us, and I love it. I think we should do it.
And
there's something happens in IRL too.
Yeah.
And you know who loves to, like, Jeff Model will tell people because, you know, Jeff knows.
Yeah.
And so he'd be like, hey, did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
So we got to get some dirt on Jeff.
Oh, yeah. There was a
Jeff Canadian, that's enough, isn't it?
Right. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. One of the VFX supervisors at DD was a figure skater. You bring it up all the time. Like randomly, you know, at the end of dailies, we'll have a picture of him in a figure skating outfit. You know? So, yeah, it's pretty good. All right, guys.
Any weird things that we should know about you, Corey?
Nope, nothing. Not at all. Great.
Okay, cool. Well, do you know what our sign-off is?
Nope.
No? Have you heard the theme song to our podcast yet?
Nope.
Oh, Corey.
Loser.
Yeah, no, all right. our sign off is we just gotta let the last bucket drop. Although it's kind of, you know, obviously people are going to, it's going to become dated because progressive rendering is going to kill that, right?
So can we just say, well, job?
Well, no. Okay. There is a website. Daniel actually has that registered. But yeah, so we're going to let the last packet drop, and I appreciate it. So thanks, guys. Again, if there's anything that you guys want to hear or see or if there's someone you want to talk to or you whatever or questions, so let us know.
Or if you want to be on the podcast.
If you want to be on a podcast, let us know.
Come on in.
Come on in. You know where it is.
Or get a Skype account.
That's right. That's right. It'll work too now. All right, guys. Thank you.